here in this state, or at least a couple of guys' views of it anyway. I'd like to introduce on my left Tommy Knowles from Crescent City, over here with the Organized Fishermen of Florida cap on. Next to me is Theodis Corbin of Steinhatchee, and both of them are demonstrating some things over here. Tommy's making some wire traps right over here. You can see him from here. And Theodis is putting together a bird dog boat, and you've probably seen that right over here in front. Now, I wanted to start by asking Tommy to tell us how he got started in fishing to begin with. How old were you?
Probably in the first grade. I was born in Georgia, and we moved to Florida shortly after. And my dad fished, and I got into it at an early age. All through my school years, I fished with my dad, and discovered that it wasn't as easy a life as I wanted. So I tried other jobs after school, and decided that wasn't what I wanted either. So I came back and took on fishing as a full-time occupation after high school. And basically, that's how I got started in it. It's just a family business, and I liked it. After trying a few other jobs, I liked it because of the independence that it afforded me. Not tied down to 8 to 5, you make your own hours, which is about 20 of them a day. And to me, that was it. It's outside work. You all the elements you contend with, and you have to like it to be in it. You can't be in it for the money, because the money's not there. It has to be something you like to do, and I do. I like to do it.
Now, Theodis, how did you get started in fishing? You were telling me you started how long ago now?
I started about kindergarten, I guess. I met my first cousin. We was, I guess, about 5 or 6 years old. Well, I've been on the net table of a bird dog, we call it. And it took my interest then. I've been fishing ever since, off and on. Like him, I tried jobs, but jobs wasn't what I wanted. I like the freedom because I sing a lot in church. I minister a lot. I like the freedom of being my own boss. But like he said, it ain't the money. It's altogether something else. It's just enjoying what you do and your freedom that you have with your family. My family means a whole lot to me. But I started when I was young. Me and my first cousin, we both the same age, and both of us liked to froze to death when we was little, but that's where we wanted to be. And I've been fishing. What I make my living at is right now, for the last 7 years, has been fishing. I've done it working. When I'd work with own public jobs, I still fished of a night, and I've done that for 15 years. But to make my occupation the last 7 years, I guess, totally sold out to fishing, and it's been a difference. There's been a lot of changes made. And when I first started fishing, we wasn't getting nothing for our fish. Basically, now, as far as a commercial fisherman's concerned, what you pay for it on the over the counter, there's a lot of difference in the range of price. What are we getting and what you having to pay for it? But like I say, it still ain't the money. It's what you get out of what you're doing. But I really enjoy what I am doing. And I'm sure his situation's the same way. You start at the bottom. What we get, we have to ask for. I guess you have to ask for it on any job, but we ask for more money, even in our fishing occupation. But I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy the living, enjoying my family, I guess, most of all. Because I have that time with them.
Now, Tommy, I was wondering if you could tell us about the type of fishing and the type of fish that you go after down where you live.
What I go for mainly are three different species. Catfish, and I'm going to talk back and two on catfish and crabs, but used to, I say used to now, several years ago we're talking about, and back during my daddy's time when he was fishing, he fished solely for catfish. And you could do that. You could take one fishery and you could survive on one fishery. And he did it with catfish. And catfish is where I got my start. But in later years, we branched off and started doing crabs, catching crabs, and eel, catching eels. Now, the catfish industry has changed over the last few years. It's gotten so that I don't believe that there is any one man left fishing on the river that does catfish only. He has to branch out and do other species, because at certain times of the year the catfish are they don't run as good. I don't know why. They won't go in the traps or the nets or won't bite the trot lines. So during that period of time, you have to rely on something else to pay the light bill. So that's what I do now. Catfish used to be primary, and right now catfish has turned out to be secondary. Primary now is blue crab. I do more blue crabbing now than I do of the other fishers. But the biggest money product in the freshwater now is eels. And used to, back when we were catfishing, we would throw the eels away. Wouldn't keep them. We would, at certain times of the year, we would put out what we call a cut bait. And what that is that's a saltwater fish called a herring. And we'd bait our catfish traps with the herring, and that would attract the eels to the trap, and the eels would eat the bait before the catfish would get a chance to go in there. So we would do what they would call eeling our ground. And that'd be, you'd take the eel traps and you'd go out and you'd try to catch up all the eels on your catfish ground so that they wouldn't eat the bait before the catfish got there. So we would do that. And back during my daddy's day when we did that, we would just catch the eels and put them in the boat and wait for them to die and then haul them to the dump. Now, at that time, you couldn't even give them away, let alone sell them. Now, I wish that I had all those ones back that we used to haul to the dump this past year. And eels are a cold water species. We go for eels during the wintertime when the water's cold. Something happens in the summertime, I don't know what, but the eels just don't want to go in the pots. But this past winter, eel price went to over $2 a pound, fisherman's price. And believe me, that's a good price for a fisherman and his product. But it was a slim run. There was very few eels caught this year. And that's the way it goes. One of the things that contributed to the price being so good was that big fish kill they had over in Europe whenever they poisoned the Rhine River. That helped us out here on our eel market, because most of the eels go to the European market. We keep them live, and the truck picks them up live, and they're shipped overseas live. So that's the best money product, but it's the least productive. Crabs are most productive for the longest period of time.
Thanks, Tommy. It's a fact of life in most fishing communities that fishermen have to be prepared to adapt to what's around, to the market as well.
Exactly.
As the species.
Exactly.
And you find that just about everywhere. It's not every fisherman who's lucky enough to depend on one species all the time to earn his living. Now, Theodis, can you tell us something about the fishing that you do?
Well, we catch mullet, what's being served out here, practically year-round. It's our survival fish in one sense of the word. We there and we exist off of them. But our money fish is in your trout, your redfish, which are where the commercial industry is not banded from right now. It's in process. We're under a 90-day ban, but that's statewide. But trout, your speckled trout and your red drum, and we call them bottom fish, basically, is what we call them. That's our money fish. That's our survival fish through the summer, through the winter, whether we make it through the summer or not. Same way with him, sounds like. His eel, if he catches a lot of them, is going to take him through the hard times. And that's the way ours is. another thing that we've had open up for us, like him, we've killed tons of them, and that's sharks. But sharks in the last 2 years is starting to bring us a price on the market. Your price for them now will be $5 a pound. a lot of you probably say, I don't want some of them. Well, I didn't want some of them either, but if you ain't never tried shark, you don't know what you're missing. If it's done right and taken care of, you'll never find a better tasting fish. It's unreal the difference in what they smell like when you catch him and when that hide's off of him and what he tastes is like. But if you just kept what he smelled like in your mind while you was trying to eat him, you just have to forget eating a shark. But that ain't the way it is. It is a very good fish, and it helps us out in the summer because that's when they come to the shore. They leave in the winter. They're not a cold water fish, and it helps us through the summer. We've just started catching them, a few of them, in the last two summers, and they're getting to be a good market for shark. And it helps keep us off of the shoreline, I guess, in one sense of the word, chasing them hard-headed mullet and keeping our lower units on our kickers. But we're getting a good price out of them. It helps us on our price. We get 35 for our tubes. And last year we got 70 cents after we filleted them out. And it's a full-time job. If you ain't never skinned a shark, you really missed an adventure. If you've ever skinned a hog, you know near about what it is like skinning a shark. But it takes two or three to wrestle him there to get that hide off of him. But our money fish for surviving. I hope our red drum isn't taken away from us. The state people seem to think that they're an endangered species. Well, not an endangered, but they don't want them to become endangered. We catch, I think, something like 18 to 20% of what's caught in the state of Florida, the commercial industry, and they're trying to string us up and saying we the problem, but we're not the problem. But anyhow, that's the situation with what we're standing in. The OFF, that's what who's serving you your dinner today, is Organized Fishermen of Florida. It's our chapter out of Steinhatchee. And we're just as concerned about the redfish species as the sports fisherman is, because it's our living. And we become the problem somehow or another, and they wanted us out of the picture. Our Marine Fishery Commission did. We become the problem with our 20% catch, and they was catching 80% of what was being brought to the shoreline. But somehow or another, we become the problem. But I'm thankful to our governor that he didn't see it that way. Everything's been going downhill for OFF for the last 3 or 4 years on this side. And I don't even know why I'm talking about this, but still in all, maybe the public needs to know what's going on. You can hear one thing and think something else, but I'm here to tell you the truth. I've been to the cabinet meetings and seen what our Marine Fishery Commission's doing to the commercial man. But still in all, I'm glad shark's picking up for us, and I'm glad to be a commercial fisherman. My dad was. All of his sons are commercial fishermen. There's five of us. We all commercial fish. That's all we know. I didn't finish high school. That's my fault. I know it ain't nobody else's fault but mine. But I'm glad to be a commercial fisherman. There ain't many of us. But I'm glad to be a commercial fisherman. I'd like to fish the rest of my life, but circumstances may stop that. Not only circumstances, my calling in the ministry may stop that, but that'll be all right. I just wanted the public to know what was happening in the state of Florida, I guess, for us. And want you to know, we're out to save our own selves, not to destroy ourselves. If We have a resource problem. OFF commercial fishermen want to be just as much as involved in saving our livelihood as well as saving the sports fishermen's livelihood. And it'd be stupid to put our own self out of business. But I don't know why I even got off in that field, but go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, well, we're talking about a lot of things here today, and when we're talking about fishing, it's very difficult to ignore the whole issue of politics and regulation because it's something that fishermen have to contend with every day. All of us have to contend with laws and regulations in our daily lives, but it seems like the impact of those sorts of things are especially strong on the segment of the population that's made up of commercial fishermen here in the state. We've got just a few minutes, about 5 minutes left in this workshop. I was wondering if anyone in the audience had a question for Tommy or Thetis about fishing or about the way things have changed over the years in their communities. Any questions? Yeah.
Fishing is like logging. If the logger cuts out all the raw products, he doesn't have anything, he has to move on. I like what you said about watching out for your products. I don't know what happens when you get away with that.
Let me say something here about one of the problems, and I think it's probably the biggest problem in the state of Florida, in my opinion now, and I've seen it coming since I was a kid, and in the last 10 years, it has progressed rapidly, and that is water degradation. That is the number one problem with fisheries of any sort in the state of Florida right now, and at the rate Florida is growing, it's going to become even worse. And you can take that from someone who's been on the water all of his life and has seen a drastic change in the last 10 years. For example, my father fished an area that I fish now with my catfish traps, and during the time he fished, the lake bottom was as clean as this floor we're standing on up here. By that I'm saying the bottom that he fished was blue marl clay bottom, hard bottom. Now on that same bottom there is anywhere from 8 to 14 inches of silt on top of that clay bottom. Grasses that used to grow along the lake shore for as far out as 150 yards in the lake, no longer grow in the lake. The grasses are not there. When we do get a little start of grass, it dies out for some reason. Nobody seems to know anything. When my dad fished, he would put his fish traps out in September, would not take those fish traps out of the water until June of the following year. That was his catfish season. He never had to take them out to clean them up or do anything to them, fished them all year round. I, on the other hand, when I put my fish traps in the water in August, I have to take my fish traps out of the water within 3 weeks, dry them out, clean them up, and retar them, put them back. Growth problem of algae and fungus in the water is a problem that causes me to do that. Until the water gets cold, and I say cold, we're talking below 65 degrees, the fungus grows, that you have to take your fish traps and eel traps out of the water periodically, and the longest time you will ever get to fish them without taking them out and cleaning them up is about 6 weeks, and that's at prime season. So the thing that I'm saying about water degradation is we have more development along the waterways. We have more dumpage of sewage in the waterways. The nutrient level in the waterways is at a point where it's going to become a real problem. It's already a problem for us, has been for several years, and soon it will be for everybody. Mussels is a little black shellfish. As kids, we used to go out in the lake and walk along and pick them up by the bucketfuls. That's what we used to bait our trot lines with mussels. Now there's so much mud and silt along the shoreline, mussels are gone. Mussels are a thing of the past in the lake. They're just not there anymore. So anyway, the thing that I'm saying is we have a problem in the waterways. When someone, for example, comes down on the waterway and buys a lot, wants to settle on the water, the first thing he wants to do is clear it off, push up every bit of underbrush, grass, trees, and start off with a clean lot. Then he has to have field dirt hauled in. Then we get the rains, and then every bit of that silt that washes out of that sand washes to the lake through the drainage ditches and so forth and so on. And then we have, when he puts in his yard, all the fertilizer that goes in there. And if you have tunnel vision, if you're saying, I'm just one guy, and what one little thing I'm doing is not going to bother anybody else. But when you have several thousand of these doing the same thing, then that's where we have our nutrient problem. So there's a lot of things involved in what happens out there. One thing impacts the other so hard that it's unbelievable. So anyway, back in my father's day, we never carried water with us. Whenever we would get thirsty, we just reach down the lake, grab a handful of water, and slug it down. Back on the seine boats, my dad used to take an old tin can, scoop up lake water, put it on the manifold of the old engine that he used in the launch, and that's the way he would make his coffee, lake water and the manifold of the engine for the heat. But we would drink lake water. But now I believe that I would perish from thirst before I drink any of that water out of there now. It's unbelievable how bad it is.
Okay, we're just about out of time here in this workshop, and this, of course, is a very large issue that's impossible to cover in just the short time we have this afternoon. Many issues are involved when you're talking about continuity and change in fishing communities, including how fishing techniques have changed, the abundance of species, the quality of water, and, of course, the impact of development as the population grows and the demand for shoreline space increases. Something's got to give, and usually it's the environment and fish and other creatures that are in the water. And, of course, by connection, the fishermen themselves. Okay, I want to thank very much Tommy Knowles from Crescent City for joining us and Theodis Corbin from Steinhatchee. Can we give them a little round of applause, please?
Thank you.
Okay, they're going to be going back to what they're doing, making traps and building boats, and I'm sure they'd be happy to talk to you later this afternoon. Thank you again.
Thank you.